on digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
A more formal welcome to the programme. I am here with Boyd Hilton. There's no Mark and Simon this week. And, you know we can't compete, Boyd. No. We realise that.
Yeah, we're happy with that.
Yeah, we are.
We're realistic, I'd like to think.
That's good, yeah. Right, top 10. At 10, Four Lions. First of all, Boyd, what is Four Lions?
Four Lions is the very good Chris Morris film about Islamic fundamentalist terrorists, a little group of them, four of them, in this country. And they're kind of a group of bumbling doofuses, basically. And it's a very interesting film. I think it's very good, thought-provoking, moving in the end, more than anything. Perhaps more moving than funny. It has some funny moments.
Really funny.
Yeah, some of it's really funny, but other bits not so much. And I think for me, the flaw in this film, though, is that the main character is such a nice, well-adjusted family guy with a lovely wife and kid. I couldn't quite work out why he was an Islamic fundamentalist terrorist. I didn't think there was enough they gave you of his.
Do you mean Nigel Lynch's character Barry?
No. The main character. I can't remember his play by. He's a really nice. He's got a lovely wife and kid, and there's scenes where he talks about, he's talking to the wife and kid about what he's going to do.
They're quite a good scene. Mark Kermode talked quite highly of that.
Riz Ahmed plays him.
That's right. And he talks to his child, and I think he uses the Lion King as a metaphor for jihadism. And it's a good scene. It's a well-written scene.
But he's totally happy and contented. And I didn't buy it. I didn't buy his character.
I thought it was a really funny film. We talk about expectations.
Yeah.
My friend, who I tend to agree with on films, went and was a bit underwhelmed by it. So I went in expecting it not to be very good and thought it was hilarious at times.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I think it's a really, really good film. And it's also done very well. It's still in the top 10. It's made well over nearly £2.5 million, which is really good
it's
for
done better
a low
than
budget.
I thought it was.
Done really well. I mean, there's a huge, I think Chris Morris, there's a huge audience out there for anything he does. I think people absolutely worship him.
And it's been in the top 10 for quite a while.
A few weeks,
And let's compare it to the Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant film.
It's interesting,
I enjoyed.
I loved it.
You loved it. Yeah. And that seemed to disappear.
Didn't do so well, It's interesting, I mean,
There's huge support for Ricky and Stephen, so I wonder why this stuck around and that didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's possibly a feeling that Chris Morris is trendier, more fashionable, cooler, I think now. I think probably Ricky and Stephen, I don't think they worry about that kind of thing, but I think they're probably there's a sense they're more mainstream. I think Chris Morris has a really cool, edgy audience there that will flock to anything he does. And I wonder whether Ricky and Steve's film, Cemetery Junction, there wasn't that sense about it, and there wasn't a kind of must-see aspect to it. Wrongly, in my opinion, because I think it's a really great film.
Quite a few people said of Four Lions that it didn't seem to have much of a message about it, or didn't have anything to say, rather. And I don't agree with that. What it seems to say is that actually terrorists, a lot of them, are idiots. Yeah. They're stupid.
Yeah.
And there was a terrorism expert in America who came out and said one of the best ways of combating terrorism is for comics to get out there and undermine them.
Yeah, I thought that was a very ridicule them. I do think that's what it's saying. And I think Chris Morris did years of research on this film to get to arrive at that kind of realization, really, and that shows absolutely in the film. It's the other three characters who are idiots are convincing. It's just the main character I didn't quite buy.
My editors pointed out we're still on.
Yeah, we're still number 10. Yeah.
Let's go on to number 9 and be quicker. Bad Lieutenant.
Bad Lieutenant is I very much enjoyed it. I think it's a very funny, entertaining film. Some people may think it's completely mystifying and over the top and ludicrous, but if you kind of buy into the tone of it, I think you'll have a good time. It's Nicolas Cage's most interesting demented performance for a few years, and he is a man who gives many interesting demented performances.
He's getting better, though, isn't he? I mean, his last couple of films, you look at Kick-Ass, he's terrific.
He's great in Kick-Ass,
He's good, he's on
done
form.
He's done a lot of vehicles that have been awful in the last few years.
Richard says, David in Lewisham, when I was 13, I was accused by our local priest of stealing a bracelet. When the girl found it in the lining of her coat sleeve, he didn't even apologise. I forgave him, though, says David. We're asking if a man of the cloth has ever spoken ill of you. There's a few more. We'll do some after number 8, The Losers.
The Losers. I think this is a disappointing box office for probably quite a big budget film adapted from a comic strip about a group of undercover CIA agents who get targeted and then they try and have their revenge. It's kind of film like it feels like it should. It feels like it should be a 15 rated at least film and be very violent and over the top. It's actually they toned it down, I think, to get a kind of PG or 12 rating. And it's subsequently, it's kind of pointless because it's kind of adapted from quite a violent comic strip, but they've taken all of that out of it. So it's a bit slightly lame.
I was in the shopping centre called Westfield, which is near here in West London, yeah, 2 days ago, and I ran into Eamon Holmes, who you might be familiar with.
I love Eamon.
And he's just leaving the cinema, and I said, what have you been to see? And he said, The Losers, it is hilarious, was
really?
His quote.
Well, each to his own. I wouldn't say, I didn't think it was hilarious. But, you know, it's perfectly enjoyable. Harmless, perfectly enjoyable film.
Right, number 7, Space Chimps 2.
Space Chimps 2, I haven't seen it. But I saw the original Space Chimps and it wasn't very good.
At 6, Iron Man 2.
Iron Man 2, I have seen this. Not nearly as good as the first one, but not terrible. But just too flabby, too long, too many bits that don't go anywhere.
The first one was excellent, wasn't it?
The first one was absolutely excellent.
At 5, The Tooth Fairy.
I saw this on the flight back from New York. I thought it was kind of a middle-of-the-road family movie, but it's enlivened by an amazing performance by Stephen Merchant.
Oh, really?
He's really good, isn't he? Yeah, he's very funny. By far the best thing in the film.
At 4, Robin Hood.
Robin Hood with the dodgy accent, of course, and it is an incredibly dodgy accent. My take on the dodgy accent is Russell Crowe's accent. It gets worse when he shouts, and he shouts a lot in the
film.
And
is it Irish when he shouts?
Well, it gets a bit Irish, controversially.
Because he walked out of that interview on Radio 4, didn't he?
Absolutely. Mark Lawson. I spoke to Mark Lawson about that. Mark Lawson came on this show and spoke about it. He was absolutely right. The accent's all over the place, but particularly when he's shouting.
I'm from Robin Hood country in Nottinghamshire.
Yes,
I remember
course.
Seeing the trail. I haven't seen the film itself.
Yeah.
And I saw the trail, and they appeared to be on the beach. And certainly Nottingham has no coastline.
No.
And none of the story of Robin Hood that I'm familiar with takes in the coast.
Originally, the film was going to be called Nottingham and was going to be about the Sheriff of Nottingham. And Crowe just came in and changed the whole thing. Said, no, I'd rather do it just about Robin Hood. And they made it all about Robin Hood on the beach.
You know the first one, you know The Prince of Thieves?
Yeah.
I know it's a bit of a naff film.
Jesus,
but there's a turn by Alan Rickman in there, which is a really good comic turn.
Yeah.
And even though it's a bit of a cheesy, embarrassing film, it's kind of quite enjoyable. Yeah. Sean Connery turns up at the end.
I'm with you. It
knows
more,
what it is, doesn't
absolutely. It's much more enjoyable than, for me, the rather clunky Robin Hood. Which
is it a bit earnest, this one?
It's quite earnest and tedious. It leads up to, in the end, you get This is the Legend of Robin Hood, and then it ends at the most exciting bit.
Let's go to number 3, The Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, Jake Gyllenhaal, buff, muscly, in this kind of weird Pirates of the Caribbean type adventure based on a video game, but it's better than Pirates of the Caribbean. It's perfectly enjoyable. You know, not great, and it's not in 3D. We should be thankful for that.
Street Dance 3D. Is that in 3D?
That is in 3D, and it's one of the best uses of 3D in a film of the last few years. It's lots of people dancing and thrusting into your face in the screen, and it kind of works pretty well. It's very enjoyable, entertaining, you know, and it looks great. British film, very good use of your locations in London. It's fun. Really well.
If you were Mark Kermode, we now have a long, fairly tedious conversation about 3D.
I know, but admitted that the 3D's in this film.
At 1, the UK's number 1 film is
Sex and the City 2. It hasn't worked. It's a huge hit in this country. Not such a huge hit in America.
Really?
Yeah, it opened 3rd in America, behind Prince of Persia and something else. And a disappointing box office, but here it's still huge. It's interesting. People, I think, reviews in America were universally awful. Here it got 1 or 2 okay reviews, but it's review proof in this country and done really well, disappointingly and depressingly. And the second half is terrible. And the other thing I wanted to say about it before we go to news is all the supposedly funny lines are just puns. They're talking puns like Kathy Lett writes her novels. And it's like, since when did women or anyone talk in puns constantly?
They do in tabloid newspapers occasionally.
Yeah, but not in real life. No one does.
And it's also borderline racist as well. We are going to look at some new films now.
First review coming up.
Now, The Killer Inside Me, this is, for those that aren't familiar with it, it's quite controversial.
Yeah, it's adapted from a Jim Thompson novel from 1950. Jim Thompson wrote kind of pulp crime novels, very vivid, lots of kind of dirty down sex and violence, and they're amazing books, really. And Michael Winterbottom, this is his first American film, great British director. I think he's very talented. I think he's made some really good films. I think his comedies are great, particularly.
Such as, what are they,
24 Hour Party People, The Cock and Bull Story, was very good, with Steve Coogan. Now, this is controversial because, and Michael was on the show last week with Simon and Mark, and it was very interesting because I sat next to Simon Mayo at the screening. I know Simon absolutely hated it and hated the violence in it and had a very visceral reaction to it, and he explained that last week on the show to Michael Winterbottom. Michael Winterbottom kind of defended the violence. Now, what I would say is there's one particular scene here that is one of the most violent and distressing scenes I've ever seen in a film. And as Mark mentioned last week, you think back to Irreversible. Have you seen that film, Irreversible?
No.
The French film. Well, that whole film has like an 8 to 10 minute rape scene, a hideous, awful, nightmarish scene in it. But I think that film is all about violence on screen, and it's told backwards, and is very much that's what it's about. I'm not in this film. It's very interesting because this film is basically a genre crime piece. You know, it's a thriller about a very complicated plot, and it's about this guy is a cop in Texas, played by Casey Affleck, who's brilliant, fantastic actor. And he's evil, and he commits these hideous crimes. This worst one that he commits at the beginning, he gets to know a prostitute, and he's supposed to throw her out of town. They then get embroiled in a relationship, and it's not big spoiler because it happens very early on in the film. But he kills her in the most hideous, brutal, violent way. Before we get into that whole thing, maybe let's hear a clip.
Will I see you Sunday for dinner?
Well, I can't, babe. I told the fella I'd do a favor for him. I can't get out of it. Shouldn't be too late. Why don't you come on by around 10 and wait for me?
We're gonna have a talk. Talk about why you've acted the way you have these past few weeks. Understand?
Yes, Miss Dan.
Sleep well.
So there's Kate Hudson and Casey Affleck in The Killer Inside Me. The people that have seen it that I know have said that they think it's misogynistic.
Well, this is the question, because all the violence in the film, the novel is written in a first-person narrative, so it's totally his point of view, and he's telling you the story. He is narrating his violence towards these women. He also kills men, which is much less vividly shown, both in the novel and in the film. So, well, in fact, one killing of a man isn't even shown in the film at all. It's off-screen. Whereas this first scene where he kills a woman is absolutely hideous. And people will leave the cinema. Some people have left the cinema.
What's wrong with making it so hideous and so violent?
Well, Michael Winterbottom's defence, and it's absolutely valid, and I don't think, by the way, I'm not taking a Daily Mail, you know, moralistic viewpoint to this. I totally respect his decision-making as a director, and his defence is, actually, it's better to show violence as it really is, as hideous and brutal and disgusting and the aftermath, rather than a kind of cartoonish violence that you might get, I don't know, in a Tarantino film or something, where it's kind of for visual excitement and it's kind of like, you know, a kind of stylistic flourish. And I think he's got a point, but where I would disagree with him, I think, and where I think the film goes wrong, is that scene, this scene early on with Jessica Alba, is so hideous and disgusting that it totally overpowers the rest of the film, and you just keep thinking back to that scene. You keep, as you're watching it, you're thinking, why is the director doing this? Why is he spending so long on this scene? Why is it so? Does it have to be that horrible? Does it have to be that almost sick-making, if you like? And it completely, and the rest of the film is pretty much a standard crime movie. It's well done. It's stylish. It's got some great acting by Casey Affleck, but it completely overpowers the thing, and I think that's the mistake of it. I think, and in the interview last week with Simon and Mark, you know, they were saying to him, Simon was saying, "Do you realise what people are going to think of this?" And he said he was surprised by it. So I think he wants to have it both ways, because he's surprised by the people's shock and horror at this scene, and yet he's also saying it's a comment on how violence is portrayed in films. So I don't think you can have it both ways, because it doesn't have to be as horrendous as he made it. I don't think we could have got the message with a few less shots of what he shows without going into it, because it's so horrible. And I think it doesn't work. I think you come out of the film and you barely care what happens to the rest of the film. I couldn't shake that one scene. And I think, and he's had to now defend that scene constantly in interviews. It's totally kind of, you know, it's overtaken the whole film. And in the end, the film is a perfect, there's some really good stuff in it.
I've seen the trailer in the cinema, and I was struck by how stylish it appeared to be from the trailer. And you wouldn't know from the trailer that buried within the film was this disgustingly graphic
indeed
murder.
That's the problem for me. Get back to Irreversible, a French subtitled, essentially art house film, a stud, you know, a very tricky narrative. This is a genre piece. It's a crime movie. You know, it's like the Coen Brothers movie, No Country for Old Men. It's similar to that. The storytelling is similar, but that's a classic. This is a kind of okay, pretty good, sometimes very good crime movie with this scene that totally overpowers and overwhelms it, and I think it's an artistic mistake.
All right, Boyd, thank you. We'll take the travel and talk some more. What else are you going to review?
We're going to review More Fun, 4321, Death at a Funeral, and She's Out of My League. Three pieces of entertainment.
Let's dear fill-in and substitute, can't wait for the review of Brothers Bloom. This person says, for Rachel Weisz, it is a career-defining performance. That's from Scarlett, Sarah and Christine McKenna.
Yeah, we haven't really got time for a full Brothers Bloom review, to be honest. I don't think many... It's
good,
not,
bad or indifferent?
Indifferent for me. Right. I didn't think... It's one of those kind of overly quirky films. But she's good in it. She's very good in it.
Now, 4-3-2-1 yeah. is a Noel Clarke film. Remind us who Noel Clarke is, Boyd.
Noel Clarke is a young... Well, he's in his 30s now. But he starred in Doctor Who. He writes, directs and stars in his films. He did Kidulthood and Adulthood. He directed one and wrote both. He's written this, he's co-directed it, he's in it. Not a huge role, but he's in it.
And it's out today. 4-3-2-1. Before we actually play a clip of this film and explain this interesting new film that he's made.
Well,
he was on this programme last week with Simon and Mark, and you weren't here and I wasn't here.
Yeah.
But I believe he spoke about you. He spoke about Mark Kermode and you. Here's what Noel Clarke said.
Oh, good.
You know, I respect Mark. He's the only one I do care about, so, you know, I listen to him.
Yeah, and I bet when you're in the room with Boyd Hilton, so you're the only one I care about.
Believe me, I don't. Trust me. It's water off a duck's back usually. I only listen to you.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
He only listens to Mark. Now, I can understand
that. Come on. Actually, it's a shame we cut it there, because he went on to say how much he respects Phil Hilton.
That's not true. That's absolutely not true. But
he respects Paris Hilton apparently.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I've met Noel many times. He's a lovely guy. He always respects me when I see him in person. This is, you know... But I think he was showing bravado. He was saying, you know, we only... Loads of people in the film business, I'm sure, only respect Mark Kermode's opinions. That's fine. I can get over it.
Well, look, it's time for you to review this film.
Yes.
And I think one thing is clear. Noel Clarke will be paying
no attention
to what you say.
He's made that absolutely clear. I don't mind. That's fine. I can deal with it. I don't mind being ignored by the director of this film, the writer of this film. It's an enjoyable film. Just to explain, 4-3-2-1, it's about four women, four kind of young ladies. They've cheekily, the kind of the people marketing this film have used a so-called fan-made poster, I'm not sure if it was, which is a spoof of the Sex and the City poster, and they're saying, if you're going to see a film about four women having fun adventures, see this one rather than Sex and the City 2. And I think they've got a point, because this is a better film. It's about four women in London who somehow get involved in a dime heist, which is always going on in the background. You don't actually see it, and they very tangentially get involved. They each have their own segment of the film, telling the same story kind of from a different point of view. It's one of those films where it's got one central story told from four different angles, and they spin off each other. It's quite complicated. It's quite clever. Let's hear a clip.
Terrence. Hey. So what's your name, Sweetness?
Sweetness? Wow, does that work for you ever?
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Okay, well, my name is not Sweetness, I can assure you that. It is Joanne.
Right, well, I've never seen you on a late shift before. Joanne?
I usually work Saturday, 9 till 4, but haven't worked in a while. But, you know, gotta feed those kids, right? I know, I'm kidding. I don't have kids. I mean, I'm kid-free. Everything's all unpushed to get out, like... I'm just gonna stop talking.
Right, so you know your jobs today, yeah?
I'm here to work, so whatever.
Good. So, clean the staff toilets and the customer toilets, then sweep and mop the floor. Then do a stock check and stock shelves 1 to 12. Start new displays for the items that aren't selling well in the places I've marked. Reprice the king-size Snickers and cash up register 1 and work on register 2, which will rotate until morning. Great. Hang on, my jacket.
So there's Noel Clarke in a film directed by Noel Clarke called 4-3-2-1, out today. Is it good?
That was Emma Roberts there, by the way. I think it's entertaining. It's clearly, he's made two gritty, kind of urban, quite intense films about violence and about, you know, street gangs and all of that, which were good, I think. And he's very talented. This, I think, is changing the tone. This is a fun film. It's got lesbian love scenes in it, clearly designed for the kind of zoo nuts audience.
Is it a good film?
It's entertaining. For me, the one problem with it was, as much as I enjoyed it, and it is enjoyable, I didn't believe it for 1 minute. I just don't think it makes sense. Some of the acting's a bit variable, and it didn't quite come together for me, and it was just too unbelievable, too ridiculous. Some of these things happen in it that I just didn't buy for 1 minute. And I think the problem is, when you see a master doing it, like Tarantino doing it, or the film Go, which is a bit similar to, you kind of go along with those, the suspension of disbelief works. It didn't for me with this film.
Would you have given it a better review if Noel Clarke hadn't hurt you?
Absolutely not. I'm totally being honest.
Are you hurt?
I'm not hurt at all. I can deal with it. I'm absolutely fine with not caring what I think. I'm living with it. You know, it's fine.
Okay, thank you, Boyd. Let's move on to... We've got two more films to look at out today. One of them is Death at a Funeral, which I interviewed Chris Rock about last week.
And you saw it, didn't
And I've seen it.
What did you think?
For the first half, because it is a fairly stupid film, and for the first half, I sat there with my arms folded, thinking, oh, I'd have to come and see this rubbish. And by the end of it, I realised I quite enjoyed it. And the second half is better. It's quite farce-like, and I mentioned Fawlty Towers to him, and he said, yes, that was an inspiration. And in part, it reminded me of that episode of Fawlty Towers where they have to move the corpse around the hotel, and there's a bit of that in there.
Yeah.
And actually, by the end, it's funny, and as I said at the start of this show, there's a moment in Death at a Funeral that got the biggest laugh I have ever heard in the cinema. Yeah.
Which is a really horrible toilet scene, we should say. I mean, I thought it was absolutely horrendous. I mean, in terms of I just couldn't take the realism of that moment.
Funny.
But it is funny as well. I agree with you. It's funny as well. I think this is better than the original. That's what I'm going to say. I think the original was a little bit too slow. I think they...
Just to explain the original, it was a small
British film.
Set in Brighton with Keely Hawes and Matthew McFadden.
Exactly, yeah.
Directed by Frank Oz, who voices Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
But hardly anyone saw it.
Yeah, absolutely. No,
Chris Rock saw it.
Chris Rock saw it. And it's, you know, you could see why he was attracted to it. And it's got, you know, it gives him... It's a vehicle for him. You know, and people like Martin Lawrence, Tracy Morgan from
30
Rock, Zoe Saldana's in it from Avatar. It's got a good cast. Actually, the whole film is stolen by James Marsden, who plays the guy who accidentally takes drugs and ends up naked on the roof. And he is brilliant in it. I think he's really good in it, and he gets all the best moments.
Did you think by the end of it? Did you think that was funny?
I thought he was. I thought enough of it was funny for it not to be a disaster, and it's better than the original.
Mistakenly taking some hallucinogenic drugs. When I saw that, I thought, oh, what a lazy concept
absolutely.
For comedy. Please,
but doesn't he? Do well.
He
does really well with it. But let's leave the last 2 minutes for a film that another mainstream comedy, She's Out of My League, which stars Jay Baruchel, who you recognise from films like Tropic Thunder. He's a kind of geeky looking guy, very skinny geeky guy. It's all about how he is going out with this beautiful blonde, buxom, beautifully toothed woman, played by Alice Eve, Trevor Eve's daughter. Trevor Eve plays her dad in the film as well. This looks like a terrible standard romantic comedy, kind of teen romantic comedy. It's actually very enjoyable, surprisingly witty and clever, and it's directed by a British guy called Jim Field Smith, who I used to see all the time, like in London. He was at the same agency as Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant, and this is his first film. He somehow ended up directing this film. He was in a comedy group called the Dutch Elm Conservatoire, terrible name, and he somehow ended up directing this film, and he's done a really good job. It's funny, it's smart, it's not your standard Hollywood romantic comedy that Mark Kermode hates so much and has to review every week. I think it's the film of the week, quite easily the film of the week. It's enjoyable. It's marred by one or two kind of over-the-top moments, which are a bit like Sub-American Pie, but I would recommend it. I think it's a really good film.
That's Cheese Out of My League. So the new films this week are 4-3-2-1, Death at a Funeral, She's Out of My League, and not forgetting the first film by Michael Winterbottom, which is called The Killer Inside
Me.
The Killer Inside Me. Thank you very much,
Boyd. Thank you.
I really enjoyed that.
Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To find other programmes you might be interested in, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Hello, me again. To watch my latest reviews, head to www.bbc.co.uk/markkermode and check out my blog, Kermode Uncut.